full of wind and winds in this off the element, it's raining on charades.
Hello and welcome to Radio Charades. I hope you've got your masks on, your capes flapping and your spandex tight, because it's another super episode of Radio Charades. Here, of course, my sidekick, or possibly I'm his sidekick, it's Toby Frost.
Spandexed up to the hilt, Owen. Hello.
Well, that's where it's got to go, hasn't it? I don't know. It is a super episode because, main topic.
Yeah.
We're trying to ride the zeitgeist.
Yeah, it's quite tricky.
Which is sort of a small whale, isn't it?
I thought it was like a large flying creature. But
A small whale.
A small whale, yeah.
That flies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we are going to talk about Avengers.
Yeah.
But we've got other things to deal with first. It's quite an important episode for us because we've gone totally professional now.
We have.
Totally professional.
Yeah. The well-oiled machine is now a well-run ship.
Yeah. Without the boring preamble story, a nice chap called Pete has got in touch and said, "Hey, I'll edit a couple of episodes for you for free."
Mm.
Yeah, that's right. Free. Which is the magic word because we haven't got any money.
Yes.
So, as individuals and as podcasters.
Yes, we're actually doing this from the inside of a telephone box.
Yeah, it's easier. It's good acoustics.
It's great.
So, Pete has offered to edit a couple of episodes for us. So, I'm going to make it extra hard for him. I've given Toby two pens, both clicky. I have got a bit of a cough. So I'm hoping to have one of my normal choking fits mid-episode, somewhere around the mid-section. And Toby's provided the news, so I'm hoping that that will be amusing enough to lead us to our normal silent fits of giggles that totally don't get recorded.
Yeah, yeah, we find this hilarious. You may find it just like a desert.
I have to cut out, you know, minutes worth of sort of horsey wheezing that comes across when we... find it particularly funny.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Yeah, when we speak. Yeah, so good luck, Pete. Of course, for the rest of us, it is going to result in is crushing disappointment for our listeners, because if Pete does a really good job...
They'll hear us.
I was going to say, if he does a really good job, then they'll be really disappointed when they come back to me editing it, because it's only going to be a couple of episodes.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a crushing disappointment.
Yeah.
And for me, obviously, it's going to be a crushing blow to my ego if he produces better quality, which he undoubtedly will. So with that in mind, let's have some feedback from the edit, maybe, if people would like to get in touch via the Facebook group or, of course, Gmail, radiocharades@gmail.com.
Yep.
Just try and be gentle with me.
Okay.
Be nice to Pete. But be gentle with me.
Okay.
It's really embarrassing to do it when you know somebody else is going to edit it. Because all those bits that normally I effortlessly trim out all the real junk.
The total dross.
When I can't speak properly for a couple of lines. Now I feel embarrassed or have to say things like edit point and things like that. But we're not professionals and Pete is. So this... It's on you, Pete. thank you for doing that. And we'll hear more about that next time, I should think, as well. So, the news cracks straight on, Tobes.
Emergency temporal shift. It's the news bit.
As has happened a few times before, I'm going to start by reading out the titles of the news stories.
Which you didn't click on?
Which I didn't click on for various reasons, which will become apparent. And these were all culled from that fine periodical, The Metro, in London.
Before you go any further, I was staying at somebody's house and they had a copy of... it was some highbrow periodical. The Economist. Something of that ilk.
Gosh, you've been breaking into some really impressive houses.
Yes, I know, but don't say.
Okay.
And on their brief news, they had two bits that they'd clearly just stolen from us. They had from a couple of episodes ago. They had stolen news about bees and robots that do Jenga.
Really?
It was on the same page.
Oh, well, they're obviously listening. So, Hello Economist.
Yeah, absolutely. If that was the publication I was reading, I can't remember.
Other publications,
do exist.
Yeah, they do.
And they steal from us.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, sorry, Tobes.
Okay, well, let's get back to the coalface of news. Uri Geller claims to have created a leak in the House of Commons roof.
Right, okay. To what end?
Top end? Having had a look at this, well, I didn't actually click on the link, as tradition requires, but I can say that...
Because it was a newspaper.
Yeah, it's leak as in...
water.
Water, not as in the vegetable.
Because there was one, wasn't there?
A leak.
Yeah.
Yes, leak of water.
Of water, yes.
Yeah, apparently that's his doing, apparently, so yeah.
Why is what I'm trying to ascertain.
Maybe he was just sort of bending some metal and a hole appeared in the roof.
No, that's how, yeah. Not why.
Oh, I see.
Why did he want to cause the leak?
Maybe he was just envious at how smoothly run and professional it was.
There you go.
And yeah. He thought he'd have a go at trashing the place and just sort of making it...
Bloody foreigners coming over here, bending our spoons. Yeah. Okay, fine.
He probably has to say what size of spoon he wants to bend as well. It's probably very careful regulations on this.
I should think
so. Our next story title, and again, I didn't click on this one.
Because it was a newspaper.
Man paid housemate £170 to cut off his penis in attempt to go viral.
And when he says viral, I'm presuming he means in an internet speak kind of way.
Not just septic. Yes, I, that's my first thought. I don't think any of that is something I want to know more details about.
I didn't want to know that much detail, Tapes.
Fair enough, I'll move right on.
Thank you.
Slightly more happy story here. Well, not happy, actually. Dog tries to eat microphone after being asked, quote, how do you cope with fame?
Nice, that's good. Podcasting dog, no doubt.
Well, I did see a very, very small clip of this, and it was simply a dog trying to eat a microphone as a man pushed it into the dog's face.
Right.
Now, dogs don't have terribly good vision, so it might have just thought it was an ice cream.
It might have just thought, this man's pushing this thing into my face, I'm going to get it. I think that's a slightly better plan of how to make a viral video than the previous story.
Yes, I think that's very true,
I still think it's a terrible use of time.
Yes.
Right now, as well as then.
Okay, well, in that case... We'll move right on.
Splendid.
My last story that I didn't click on the link for is man calls police when he doesn't get enough chips.
Chips as in California Highway Patrol?
I didn't see Elder TJ Hooker on it, so I can't confirm that, right, but I okay. also can't deny it. So do you want to reread that? Man calls police when he doesn't get enough chips. That's my William Shatner voice.
Why?
Because he was in Chips, wasn't he?
No.
Oh.
I wondered why you were talking about TJ Hooker. I just thought you'd...
So he was in TJ Hooker, but not Chips?
No. Chips was the two cops on bikes.
What was TJ Hooker then, apart from Shatner?
I don't think he was on a bike, was he?
I don't know.
I never watched TJ Hooker. Oh, it was too confusing.
I feel I've just let the side down now.
You really have.
Yeah, I feel like I really have. You know, given that I wasn't going to research this, I've made a really poor job of the research.
You really have.
I'll move on to longer stories.
Right, okay, good.
Piranhas found in Yorkshire Lake where ducks have disappeared and children play. Local child owner, Tony Hooper...
A child owner?
That's right, I forgot the word. Mother.
Parent?
Parent.
Right, okay.
Local parent, Tony Hooper, discovered two very fat dead piranhas on a walk.
Nice.
It was, quote, not the kind of thing you tend to find in Doncaster.
Indeed not.
Which is where our scene is set.
Right, I assumed as much.
Yeah. Apparently environmental standards officers advise against paddling in Martin Wells Lake now.
Oh, gosh.
Owing to the presence of large piranhas. It's suspected that the piranhas may have come from someone who owns small piranhas dumping them in the lake.
Seems likely.
It is substantially colder in the lake than it is in the Amazon, you might be surprised to learn.
So, yeah.
Yes. Of course, the other option, looking at the headline, is that the children are eating the ducks. And yeah. The piranhas have been sort of unjustly framed.
Or the evolutionary process that we didn't understand, or the breeding cycle of a piranha includes looking like a duck for a while. Because the ducks have disappeared and the piranhas are there now. Well, presumably the ducks have become the piranhas.
Makes an awful lot of sense. Well,
that's the only thing that does make sense.
There's no wonder the piranhas were found dead beside the river, because they can't fly.
No.
They're trying to fly and it's falling over.
Just being out of the water, full stop.
Well, I think that's fascinating. I think we need to get David Attenborough on this one.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, so
get him involved.
Yeah, I think you'd like this. David, if you're out there.
King Dave.
King Dave, yeah. Drop round, have a look at the piranhas up in Doncaster.
Yeah.
Next up, Kentucky Fried Chicken is allegedly planning a hot cross bun burger.
Fair enough, I've done that before.
Have you?
Yeah.
Really, you put a burger on a hot cross bun?
Yeah, ran it, just... had the burger bit cooking in the oven before my good lady wife said, we haven't got any buns.
Yeah.
And my only response was, we've got hot cross buns. So, yeah, I put...
Really?
Yeah, it was all right.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Because this new burger is apparently currently being trialled by, quote, chief innovators at KFC.
Yeah.
So I didn't know KFC had chief innovators. I did check this. It wasn't chef innovators.
Is that a person?
Chief innovators. It might be.
Is he an asterisk?
He is. Yes, I think he is. He's the one who stands on the shield.
Yeah.
Or the huge burger.
Yeah.
Yes, that's chief innovator. In the amazing scoop, KFC had exclusively released the recipe.
A scoop of KFC.
Exclusively released the recipe to Metro. What you had to do was buy a KFC, chuck away the bun, and stick the kind of gooey stuff, including the burger, into a hot crust bun.
And you've done it.
I haven't done it. It sounded foul.
No, I mean, that's it.
That is the recipe, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was an option to toast the hot crust bun first as well.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. See, I'm not really sold on this. I'm not sold on brioche buns. Because they're kind of like, they're either very sweet, or it's like a slightly rubbish croissant.
My biggest concern with them is the structural integrity.
Right.
Yeah. You've got a juicy burger in there with relish or whatever, and it can't hold up to the task.
It's burned straight through the hole.
Exactly. At which point, what are we doing? You know.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're putting a bun together that doesn't hold up, then
you might as well
get out of my world.
Get out down.
Yeah.
Yep. I think I'd go along with that. So I think I'll be giving that one a bit of a miss. We did eat buns earlier.
Yes, we're all sugared up thanks to iced buns. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're very civilized and sophisticated here. We've got our tuxedos on.
We have, yes, as ever, and our large coffin-shaped microphone, BBC written across from it.
Yeah.
We nicked off. Our next story we'll be going abroad for. The Russian state news channel Rossiya 24 has got a robot presenter.
Tidy.
Yep, this is new in the world of robots. He is called Alex, and apparently he resembles the channel's owner, Alexei Zukharov. However, viewers have claimed that Alex looks drunk on air and spouts government propaganda.
Okay. Well, he sounds like a Russian media mogul.
Yeah, right? That's how I'm seeing him, actually, yes. Apparently, he cost around 1 million rubles, which sounds really impressive until I did a bit of research and discovered that's 12,000 quid.
For a robot newsreader, that's fairly reasonable, isn't it?
And the channel apparently has plans to introduce, quote, 12 more humanoids.
Humanoids, good.
Yeah. I don't know if he's the first robot TV presenter at all and her regular slot.
There's definitely a Japanese one as well, isn't there?
Yes, I think there is.
Yeah, I think we've come across that previously in thinking about different episodes of robot things.
And finally?
Yes, finally.
Finally.
Thank God. I mean, yes, Toby, what?
Finally, British man tries to flee Australia on a jet ski armed with a crossbow.
Which direction?
Ah, good question, though.
I thought so.
Because it's quite a big place. There's lots of directions around it.
Yes, and there's lots of distance to travel in most directions.
The man was arrested having gone 90 miles towards Papua New Guinea.
Okay.
And he stopped on a mud flat. I don't know if he stopped there for a little rest, because bouncing up and down jet ski, especially whilst you're holding a crossbow, is probably quite strenuous.
Yeah. There's fuel issues, I guess, with a
yes,
jet ski.
I'm not sure if this is the best thought out plan.
Yeah.
Apparently he was wanted on drugs charges, so perhaps he was as high as a kite.
Okay.
And a member of the Australian Border Force said, quote, "We have the ability to detect a range of border threats, including suspicious movements."
Nice.
And I feel this really does qualify as a suspicious movement.
Yeah. Definitely.
So, yes, that's how to escape from Australia.
That is how to not successfully escape from Australia.
On a jet ski with a crossbow. Though it probably is how to appear in an episode of Miami Vice.
Yes.
I think that probably happened every other episode.
I'm interested by the crossbow. I don't know why that's the feature that interests me most, but it is.
Yeah.
Is it because he's thought about it enough to say, well, can't take a gun on a jet ski because fundamentally there's a lot of water and, you know, I'm risking, misfire or whatever. So the only sensible option is
a crossbow. Yeah.
I feel the harpoon gun would have been...
I agree.
The better choice, but
Yeah.
But then you haven't got the range on a harpoon gun, have you?
No. I mean, I'm assuming he took it with him because he was worried about sharks or jellyfish or kraken or anything else that lives off the coast of Australia.
Yeah. Hard to know what his thought processes are, but it's an interesting addition to the jet ski.
It is, yeah.
I think if I was fleeing, I might not worry too much about a weapon. He wasn't trying to recreate a loving homage to Waterworld, was he?
Oh, yeah. Because
they were jet skis in that, and I have a sneaking suspicion. Crossbows as well.
It was sort of Mad Max on water, wasn't it?
Which links us back to Australia in a beautiful
very
way.
Very neatly, yeah. Anyway, that concludes the news.
Hooray!
That's everything interesting that's going on in the world at the moment.
Thank you for that, Tobes. On to the main feature.
Today's special feature.
Today's main feature, we're entering the world of the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because we've ditched comics. The MCU is distinct from the comic universe because continuity.
Okay.
So the comics are still being produced and they do link in with the film stuff, but there's no direct correspondence.
Gotcha.
So the MCU is the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right.
So there's a canon for that and there's a canon for Marvel, which is the comic book stuff.
Okay.
As well. So that's where it is. So the plan for today, because this week, in fact, Wednesday, which is tomorrow as we record,
yes,
the Avengers Endgame comes out.
Oh, right, it's out tomorrow.
That's out tomorrow. I'm actually going to go and see it on Thursday with father of the podcast, Alan Parry.
Right.
So
I gather it's 3 hours long.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Yeah.
It's a big one. I don't know if it's too big. Depends how good the film is, I guess. So what this is going to be today is almost like a primer for that.
Okay.
It's I can't think who it's really directed at, this episode, because I should think the people that are really interested in it and have seen all the films are probably going to rush out and they're going to go and see it. And they, by the time this episode comes out, which is however many weeks from now, depending upon how things work out, they're going to rush out and see it. And they'll have seen all these films, so it's not really for them. This is probably more for people who are thinking, right, what do I need to know ahead of watching it?
Yeah.
Which films should I have seen? Yeah. Which films can I get away with not seeing if I'm planning on catching up?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go through all the films.
Okay.
Because there's 22 of them. 21 of them.
Really?
Before Endgame.
That's a lot of films.
Yeah, right? And that's all building to this.
Yeah.
So if you are really interested in the Marvel Universe and blah, 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 then watching all of them will give you better value out of these films.
Yeah.
Because it's all nods and winks and or what they would call Easter eggs and things like that. They all interlink marvelously. But you can probably get that down to half at least.
Right.
If you think, what's the minimum I can watch?
Yeah.
I've had a look at some other people's lists and fairly agree with them. I think one of them was down to like 8 or even 7 at one point.
Right.
But I think at that point you might end up with a bunch of characters that you have to kind of do some guesswork on.
Yeah.
But if you've got a vague understanding of how superheroes work,
yeah,
you'd probably be fine.
So very briefly, who is in the MCU? Which big name should we expect and not expect?
Well, let's probably easiest just go through the films.
Okay.
Because what I've got is I've got a chronological order of all the films. You don't know the difference between Marvel and DC is what you're trying to tell me, right?
I think DC has Batman in it.
Batman and Superman, DC, Wonder Woman, DC.
That's a lot.
There's others, but none that a non-believer would be particularly aware of.
I can't believe you left Fish Finger Man out.
Condiment King.
Condiment King, yeah.
It's a Batman villain.
Is he genuinely?
Sure. There's loads of amazing Batman villains. So, this is in chronological, not release order.
Got you.
So, the first film is Captain America, the First Avenger.
Which is set in the 40s.
Which is in the World War, yeah. In World War II. So, basically, a super soldier serum. He's taken on the Nazis.
I've seen this film. I liked it very much.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah.
I think that this is a really strong opening. Obviously, like I say, it's not the first one. It actually came out in 2011.
Yeah.
Rewatched it very recently because... Yeah, we've decided that we're going to watch them all, not before watching the latest one, but we're going to rewatch them all. Captain America then plays out like an Indiana Jones film to me. It's fun, it's fast, it's exciting. Probably want to say off the top, actually, if you're into this kind of film, there's not really a bad one.
Right.
They're all decent. Good.
I think the interesting thing about Captain America, to me, from a non-enthusiastic point of view, is the whole subplot about propaganda and comics and things like that. And you actually see a Captain America comic in it.
Yeah.
And it's about a man who is a comic book hero becoming a real hero. And that's quite interesting.
Well, what's more interesting about that is that's basically how Captain America started.
Yes, that's right. There's a propaganda.
Yeah.
So it fits, it actually works very nicely as a kind of bit of real life. Yeah. It looks very nicely into real life.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I think it also, like something I found about comic book films, is that no matter where they go, they've got to have an ending where the villain and the hero punch each other a lot.
Yeah.
Usually in some kind of this thing that's falling apart.
Yeah.
And in that way, quite often the interesting bit is the first half.
Yeah. This has certainly got a weak ending. The weakness of the ending is that is also what brings it into the wider MCU, in that they punch each other and then the Red Skull touches the Tesseract and some weird stuff happens.
Yep.
And space is unveiled and something mysterious is happening.
Yes.
And then they crash.
We've seen as a single film isn't actually very satisfying. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it actually ties in really importantly with one of the first reasons why Captain America is the first of your must-see movies is because it's got the Tesseract in it.
Right.
Which is this cube that they've got, which is this power source, this amazing power source. And it's one of the Infinity Stones, which lead us to Infinity War later on.
Right.
I'll come back round to those as well, because they appear in a lot of places.
Okay.
The other thing that I felt with Captain America is the tone matches the character really well.
Yeah, it's very
because
good.
The film feels, at various points, quite hokey and sort of a bit cheesy pie, that kind of thing. It brings a whole bunch of people in that become important, like Bucky Barnes is in there. There's a whole number of references to comic book stuff. Yeah. Red Skull and Dr. Zola comes back in later. The Howling Commandos are a big thing in comic books. I like the fact that the Nazis weren't evil enough as well.
Yeah.
That the Nazis are mentioned.
Oh, yes.
Hitler never comes into it. He's mentioned in a number of conversations, but then Hydra basically go, nah, we're going to do this. We're going to destroy Berlin as well. That's one of our targets.
Incidentally, I've met the man who plays, the actor who plays Hitler.
I think you said that before. I don't know whether you said it on the podcast.
I met him at a convention. He was a really nice guy. He had to grow the moustache.
Right, for the role.
Yeah, yeah. Right. It wasn't a stick-on moustache, it's a real one.
Excellent.
Without the moustache, he looked... Well, I was going to say nothing like Hitler, but I'm not quite sure what Hitler would look like without the moustache. So, you know. Yeah, that was really good.
So, second film on the list is the latest film. It's Captain Marvel, because that's set in the 90s.
Really, there's nothing between... There's no 50s or 60s?
No.
That was like a really good place.
There's a whole bunch on the TV. So there's Agent Carter, which
follows SOE, Secret Service.
The spy in Captain America.
And she does 40s stuff then.
Yeah, she does. There's quite a few series now, but I'm not going to get into that. That would take us far too long.
Mm.
Next is Iron Man, 2008. This is actually the first film released. So this now is almost release order anyway.
Yeah.
So 2008, Iron Man. Another very standard framed film. The end is not only the baddie and the goodie punching each other, but the baddie is basically a bigger evil version of the goodie.
Right.
It's that classic of actually we've got exactly the same powers, except yours have been ramped up somehow, and I'm going to win through ingenuity or sheer pluck or whatever. It's a bit of a classic setup. Yeah.
I mean, the only other way to go is the Joker one, isn't it? Where it's an inversion of the...
Yeah. So the important sort of additions to the roster at this point then are the 10 rings.
Okay.
Which we'll talk about more in the later Iron Man film.
Are they in Iron Man 1?
They're in Iron Man 1, yeah. Okay. They're the group that capture him at the beginning.
Oh, I see. They're a group of people.
They're a group of people. Yeah, it's a terrorist organisation. Oh, I see. Yeah. Gotcha. Then S.H.I.E.L.D. is brought into effect, yep. which is the goodies,
yeah.
At least for now. Agent Coulson representing S.H.I.E.L.D. You've got Jarvis, who is the computer in Iron Man's house, who becomes important later on.
Come
back to it. Happy Hogan, who's not particularly important, but he appears in a lot of films. And Rhodey, who later becomes War Machine.
Yep.
And starts off as Terrence Howard and then ends up being Don Cheadle later on.
Yes.
And they thought we'd never noticed. It's another fairly standard one. I think the nice twist sort of comes from him being a bit more brash about being Iron Man at the end.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say, exactly like Captain America, the tone does match the character really well.
Yeah.
And watching those two on, I watched them very close recently. I preferred Captain America, but Iron Man was really kind of rock and roll, kind of punk spirit that reflected the character really well.
Yeah.
That he wasn't really playing by the rules. And I probably reflected Robert Downey Jr. in his life at that time anyway.
Yes.
Really nicely.
Because I think that was a bit of a comeback film for him, that.
Yeah, it was. It was out from rehab and prison and all the rest of it.
I don't know if Zodiac was before or after, but it was, you know,
it's around the same time. I think that didn't do much for his celebrity status as much as I wouldn't have thought so.
No,
it was great, but
it was a great film, but it was a very long serial killer flick in which I don't catch a serial killer.
In which very little happens other than obsession.
Yes.
That moves us on to the runt of the litter. So Iron Man again, before we move on, another, I would say, essential.
Yeah.
Good film. Arguably essential.
Okay.
So the main thing that it brings in that makes it a bit more essential is S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would argue that the whole series of films is the Tony Stark story. You know, the arc is him.
Right.
It's his journey. He's the character that you see all the way through.
Okay.
So the runt of the litter then, The Incredible Hulk.
Is that the Ang Lee one?
No, this is not the Ang Lee one. This is the Edward Norton one. So Ang Lee was with...
Yes, I know the guy I mean.
Banner?
I want to say Bruce Banner, but it's
obviously that obviously is not. Yeah, no, not it's, what is his
name? Eric Banner.
It's Eric Banner, isn't it? It is actually
Eric Banner. Okay, he's called Mr. Banner.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Banner.
Anyway, this one's the Ed Norton one.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Right.
It's very, just what we were saying about classic, here's the baddie who's like you, but instead of being a generally good bloke, he's a villain.
Yeah.
He's so it's basically, version. This is, well, it's not Nazi, it's an American
nasty,
army.
Nasty, sorry.
Oh, nasty, yeah. It's basically a war-like version instead of a science-like version, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
He's a chaos space marine.
Exactly. It's the same thing, but twisted.
Hmm.
It's fine as a film. It's definitely not necessary as part of your viewing list.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a long time, and I kind of thought, it's fine.
Yeah.
Comic book movie back then meant a lot less.
Yes,
but there were less available, so you took whatever you could get.
So what year was Iron Man released?
Those two are both 2008.
Right. Okay.
Releases, I think.
Yeah.
I think Incredible Hulk. I think it's 2008 from what I've got written here.
Okay.
But in terms of the continuity, it's the same time as Iron Man 2. That's The Incredible Hulk. Not really relevant. One of the biggest reasons why I wouldn't say it was particularly relevant is that you don't have the current Incredible Hulk in it. You don't have...
Oh, right.
Bruce
Banner.
Mark Ruffalo.
Ah, I see.
It's the same character.
Yeah.
So it's Bruce Banner, but it's Mark Ruffalo plays it in the Avengers.
Right, gotcha.
So he plays it in all the films that don't have the word Hulk in them.
I see, gotcha.
It's Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
So he appears in about three of these films.
Yeah.
Roughly. Probably slightly more than that. But he has made the character his own and done really well with it.
Sure.
So it jars slightly. Which is why it's quite an easy one to dismiss.
It's not one of those things where the superhero has been, you know, the identity has been passed on to somebody
else. No, it's not a different identity, it's the same identity.
I guess you'd be passing on a kind of ripped lab coat and a pair of pants. It would be very satisfactory.
Elasticated trousers.
Yeah.
Iron Man 2 then.
I wouldn't believe the adventures I've had in these
trips. And now it is your turn.
Thanks.
No thanks. So Iron Man 2. Not much of anything really.
No, I saw this one wasn't very fast.
It was fine. There's some good action in it, but nothing new is really brought into it. Nothing.
Does this introduce Nick Fury?
No, Nick Fury is introduced in Iron Man.
Okay. Oh well.
He's only introduced in the post credit scene. So Nick Fury starts appearing in Iron Man.
Yeah.
So he's in it right from the start. So he starts talking about the Avengers initiative at the end of Iron Man.
Ah, right.
And S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of all involved in that. He is at the end of Captain America, of course, as well.
Yes, he is.
Which obviously, despite being 3 years later in terms of when it was released, was chronologically first. So Iron Man 2 is fairly disposable. In terms of post-credits, they bring in Thor's hammer. So they basically just tease the fact that Thor's coming next. But it's not much of a movie.
No, I didn't like it very much.
I liked some of the things they did. I liked the idea of having another version of Tony Stark, who was just a bit still greedy and warmongery. I thought that was quite nice, but yeah. Then you've got Thor next.
It's the Kenneth Branagh one, isn't it?
Kenneth Branagh, indeed. I don't know whether I'd call Thor an essential one, but his character is the most confusing if you're not au fait with what that character is, right, I guess. Yeah. And more to the point, Loki.
Yeah.
So Thor and Loki appear a lot in the Avengers, and certainly the Avengers, which is straight afterwards, it's going to make less sense if you don't know Thor.
Yeah.
So as a movie in itself, it's a little bit by the numbers, despite having the kind of weirdness added to it of magic or not quite magic,
Space science,
yeah. What also happens around those time, that in between Iron Man 2 and Thor, are two of the Marvel one-shots. Now, one-shots is a thing that they've brought over from comic books, which is the idea that actually here's an episode that's totally out of the storyline.
Okay, right.
You don't need it. You don't need the storyline to read this.
Yeah.
You can just pick up this comic and you can have a whole story all in that comic.
Gotcha.
So it's a quick... Yeah. Look into whatever.
Yeah. Are they canon?
Or yes.
Or what ifs?
It can be either.
Okay, cool.
These are canon, sort of short, so 4 minutes, 10 minutes.
Oh, right.
A variety of different things. Two of them that come in that little gap there are the consultant, which is them basically telling Tony Stark that he's a liability and that he can't be in the Avengers.
Right.
When they set it up, he can just be a consultant.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then there's a funny thing that happened on the way to Thor's hammer, which is kind of a road trip thing with Agent Coulson, who I think stops a convenience store robbery or something. They're light and they're quick and they're easy. I recommend that if people are going to see the new one, they might like to check out all of the one shots.
Right.
All Hail the King is, which we'll come on to in a minute. Well worth checking out. Right, so after Thor comes the Avengers. Immediately you've got more characters to deal with. So they're going to fight Loki and his alien army that he's got involved coming from another planet. You've got a few new characters coming in there. They've been teased previously, but you've got Scarlett Johansson in there as Black Widow. You've got Jeremy Renner as some bloke with a bow and arrow.
Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And
Loki and Thor again. The important thing that comes into that with Loki is that his staff or scepter has the Mind Stone in it, which is another of our Infinity Stones.
Right, okay.
So that's how he is controlling people with his power of the Infinity Stones. So that means that potentially he's got the Tesseract, which is what they're kind of fighting over in that one, and the Mind Stone. At the end of the Avengers, of course, is Thanos being introduced for the first time. You see him. The great big purple raisin in a floating chair.
Yeah, he's a somewhat odd-looking creature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To challenge them is to court death, is what he is told at the end by one of his minions. To wit, he gives a wry smile, which is a comic book reference to the fact that in the comic book stuff, he is actually literally courting death.
Okay.
that's why he's doing all the crazy stuff, is he wants to get with death. That's a good film. It's definitely essential if you want to watch this, I would say.
Right.
And it leads us on to Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Which is definitely not a necessary watch.
I had no idea it existed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had no idea. It was
I think that you might like bits of it.
Okay.
So the nice thing that Iron Man 3 does, it's got this terrorist organisation called the Ten Rings, which I mentioned in Iron Man 1. Okay, and they're led by this bloke called the Mandarin. Now, in the Iron Man comics, that is a huge villain and a huge villainous organisation. Okay?
Right.
So what they do, which kind of works really nicely, we should have said at the beginning of this episode, but it was probably obvious, there were going to be spoilers all the way through this.
Oh, yeah, Yeah.
If people haven't seen the film so far, then you know, that's your lookout for listening to
this. That's a really good point.
But we won't spoil the new film because we haven't seen it. I'll be limiting spoilers, but I can't say I won't spoil bits and pieces from Captain Marvel or Infinity War. Infinity War might be the one that have big spoilers, but I will say that very loudly.
Okay.
If I'm about to do a big spoiler, okay?
Okay.
But, yeah, maybe think about whether you should be listening or not. But all of this has been out ages, so I don't feel bad about this.
Okay.
So Iron Man 3, the Mandarin, it turns out that the guy that they think is the Mandarin is an actor, and he's played by Ben Kingsley, and he does this brilliant, drunk, stoned British idiot.
Right.
Liverpudlian idiot.
Who is...
That he's... The actor. The transformation between the two is absolutely brilliant.
Right.
Between this sort of very evil-seeming man and then this bewildering idiot. And it's sort of unveiled on the viewer and the characters in the film at the same kind of time. But obviously that's then kind of... Oh, right, so the real Mandarin is still out there somewhere. The Ten Rings is just put this guy as a front man.
But yeah.
You know. So it's played like that, and that's quite interesting. And that stuff, and the stuff with Tony Stark kind of going it alone and doing his own thing, is great. One of the main things that happens with the Mandarin is he blows up all of Tony's armour and it puts Tony back down to zero, just
right.
being kind of
yeah.
a bloke who's very clever and can build stuff.
Yeah.
Rather than having all the resources that he had before.
Yeah.
What's lame is the person that, again, the end fight... And the person who actually ends up being the Mandarin, that they say, oh, this guy was the Mandarin all along. And they're kind of... it just doesn't pay off.
Right.
And you end up with this fight between some suits of armour.
Yeah.
Not with anybody in them.
Oh, right.
And some blokes whose power set you're not really sure of because they've been taking this extremist drug. Anyway, it really crumbles under its own weight.
Yeah.
And doesn't do anything much with itself.
That's
Then another one so the thing that comes after that, which is well worth watching, is another one shot, which is All Hail the King, and it's all about this actor in prison after the events of the film.
Yeah.
And somebody going to it's a documentary, set up as a documentary about him, and this interviewer talking to him, and that's really fun.
Oh, right, cool.
So if anybody actually enjoyed Iron Man 3, or more to the point, the bits with the actor in, then All Hail the King is a really nice one to watch.
Are all the shorts available on YouTube or the equivalent?
Most of them. I couldn't find one of them.
On their site.
But certainly All Hail the King is... I think they're all being put onto DVDs with the packs and things, and some of the films
right.
kind of as extras as well. So... After that is another fairly disposable film, not a great one, Thor the Dark World. It's another fine one. You know, it's another one that's got some great visual stuff, and that's got some great villains in it. But I'm struggling to remember very much about it, in fact.
Yeah.
The main thing that makes it more important is it introduced the Reality Stone. But you don't really need to know, to worry about it, other than it ends up in the hands of this bloke, the collector. But ultimately, you don't really need to know that to figure out what's going on later on.
Plot coupons, as we call them in writing.
Yeah, and not actually very valuable plot coupons, because they could have been dealt with by just going, well, he's already got that stone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Next one of your favourites, and certainly one of the high points of it all, Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, it's in the film again. Yeah.
Which, again, has got that idea of you've got some bits which are really great and some bits where you think, not kind of paying off.
It's two guys punching each other on an aircraft carrier that's hovering in the sky.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, it's some bits of that are really, really good.
Yeah.
And the 70s sort of conspiracy thriller feel to it.
Yeah.
You know, I may have mentioned 70s conspiracy thrillers on this podcast before.
Not that I recall.
And I think that really works. And that bit's really good. I think up to the point where Captain America gets into the sort of underground lab where the kind of primitive computer holding the brain of...
Which is Dr. Zola from the first one. Exactly. Yeah.
Toby Jones. That's really good. And I think that's the point for me at which the film starts to sort of change downhill. Yeah. So, yeah, pretty entertaining stuff, though.
What it does have is kind of building the world in the after credits stuff. It's unveiled that Hydra have been experimenting with Loki's scepter, and they have produced the twins, as they call them at that point, who are Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Right.
Who are key characters later on.
So that thing they had was
the scepter from Loki's stick, yeah.
Do we know how they got hold of it?
Earlier on. I can't remember off the top which film it's from.
Sure.
So next one is a switch up of pace, and that's the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is, in the same way that I said Captain America was very Indiana Jones, Guardians of the Galaxy is Star Wars.
Yes, it is.
It's a rollicking, fun ride, and, you know, to some extent, switch off your brain and just ride with it and enjoy the tunes and that kind of
thing. It makes Star Wars like 2001. I mean, it is quite deliberately the sort of space adventure where all the aliens just people spray green.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a real sort of 40s kind of, you know, comic book pulp adventure stuff.
Yeah. So that's got a number of things that make it one of the ones that are probably on the watch list. Firstly, the stone... He gets the power stone in that film. The whole plot revolves around a stone, you know, a power stone. So it also introduces a few of Thanos' family, most notably his two daughters or adoptive daughters.
I do not remember them.
The green one and the blue one.
Oh, the green one and the blue one. They were his daughters.
The robot blue one and the green one were his daughters.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. And it also introduces some of his minions, who are less than important because they are very much minions.
Yes.
So that's the halfway point. Right. Goodness grief. Guardians of the Galaxy can be considered to be straight after that.
Yeah.
It's a later film in terms of when it was produced by a number of years, but we're up to, so Guardians of the Galaxy 1 is 2014, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, 2017. But they're basically the same. There's not much that's added in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Right.
That is necessary for anything.
At all.
There's some development with the characters, but I don't think anything really evolves the plot of the universe.
Yeah.
So it's certainly, if you enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy 1, it's Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, very much so. Just more of the same. Next, you've got Avengers Age of Ultron, where I'd like it to be a bit more disposable than it is. The main thing that happens in Age of Ultron is that they end up building the Vision, who is a character that's built partially from Ultron. Vision, most crucially, has the Mind Stone in his head. So that's going to be important.
Okay.
So that's the kind of... You've also got Scarlet Witch being evolved as a character because she's going to be important, and her relationship with Vision is important as well. So It's not a great film. There's a huge amount of this is us battling 100 robot minions.
Right, yeah.
And it's great and it's visual, and but it's instantly sort of throwawayable.
Yeah.
Ultron, it's all right, but it feels a little bit more of the same.
Yeah.
If you're trying to streamline things, depending on how much you want to streamline it, that might be one that can go.
Just incidentally, I saw a picture recently of some advertising for the new Star Wars film.
Yeah.
A picture of Mark Hamill with a beard and a sort of open Hamlet-y type shirt standing in front of a crude brick wall.
Yeah.
A big fur cloak on, and it said an amazing secret drops in about Luke Skywalker. I looked and thought, he's Jon Snow's dad, isn't he? I thought, that's what it's all been leading up to. This is the crossover you're waiting for.
I see.
Yeah, it's also in Hoth.
Is it?
Yes.
That winter, Hoth, that makes sense. Winter has definitely come on Hoth, hasn't it?
Yeah, it never went away. Yeah.
Never went away.
Yeah.
Right. So ignoring your conspiracy theories, I'm beginning to feel like I should have drawn a massive flowchart or spreadsheet. Next, chronologically then, is Ant-Man, which I liked, but it's very standalone. There's not a lot to Ant-Man that makes it integral.
Yeah.
That said, the stuff that then, you know, it's another character. Yeah. Do you want to know about that character? Well, then you probably need to watch that film. Ant-Man and the Wasp, which we'll talk about more later, probably does a good enough job of introducing that character.
Yeah.
And has something that is probably going to be more plot related.
Okay.
So we'll get onto that in a minute. So next is Captain America Civil War. This is the one that I simultaneously hated and loved.
Okay.
Because I just thought so much of it was just dumb and involved people not talking to each other properly.
Yeah.
And people just picking sides. So the whole idea, the bit that I absolutely loved, was the Machiavellian plotting by this bloke who was just human.
Yeah.
Baron Zemo. Has come up with this idea that the Avengers were responsible for the death of his family, and he's going to split them all apart because he thinks they're a bad thing. And does it beautifully, engineers it so they're all at one another's throats. And the central pair that are at each other's throats are Iron Man and Captain America.
Right.
And then it's just kind of a story of how stubborn the two of them are.
Yeah.
And then everybody else just kind of picks a side.
Rather than taking the stop.
Yeah. And it's just kind of like, oh, well, I'm buddies with that guy, so I'm going to be on the same side as him.
Right.
Or, well, I've sort of got a similar power set to you, so I better go on the other side.
There's
this real
you.
Kind of division of labour, yeah. Just kind of like, well, not for any particularly good reason that we're at each other's throats.
Yeah.
It's not like anybody's actually arguing the political point that's being made, which the whole premise is, that there's a list. The government want a database, basically, of the superheroes and their powers.
Yeah.
And they want the Avengers to be accountable.
Fine.
And they want it to go through a committee.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff. And Steve Rogers is dead against that, and Tony Stark is really for that. And it's Tony Stark that's been manipulated the most by guilt.
Yeah.
Because he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
He's a bad bloke and he's done terrible things and he should feel guilty. What he does with that guilt, it just doesn't have much logic to it. I had moments of kind of like, this is just for the sake of... It's like Superman versus Batman, if I dare talk yes. about that. Batman versus Superman. That they fight because they have to, not because it actually makes logical sense for them to fight.
This is one of the problems I have with comic book stories.
Yeah,
is that because no one ever really dies.
Yeah,
or at least no idea ever really dies.
Yeah,
sooner or later the permutation means that you know you will roll the dice and you'll get the result that is the two heroes have a fight.
The two goodies have to have a fight.
Yeah, and it's like, well, why?
Yeah. So that's what this movie is. It's that crowbar of we've got to have a fight because it's time.
Yeah.
It's time. It doesn't really feel like it. I mean, I guess it makes the world feel more in peril again to see that the Avengers have fallen out and there's no kind of saviour anymore.
Yeah.
Then there's a couple of foreshadowing bits as after credit things for Black Panther and Spider-Man.
Is S.H.I.E.L.D. still around at this point?
So
it seems to be getting shut down in Captain America.
Yeah, too, yeah. S.H.I.E.L.D.'s basically gone by this point because of the events of this is kind of Civil War is the kind of fallout from all that.
Right, I see.
16 on our list.
Goodness.
Spider-Man Homecoming. It was a 2017 film, but it fits in here. I thought this was really great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It might be because it's one of the more recent films I saw.
Yeah.
But I thought it was great. They didn't waste too much time. I should have noted, of course, that Spider-Man is in the Civil War.
Oh, right. He's got a small...
He basically gets called in to play a part in the Civil War, which is... Then there's also a post-credit scene with him finding out some more stuff about his suit. It kind of covers all bases because they kind of do him as the local, the kind of neighbourhood Spider-Man, and he's a kid and he makes mistakes and stuff. It's quite a nice things with him and Tony Stark.
Who plays Spider-Man in that one?
It is Tom Holland.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Michael Keaton doing... Actually, whilst I'm mentioning Michael Keaton, one of the things that consistently, I think, happens is that you get some brilliant bad guys.
Yeah.
I guess the comic book bad guys are always going to be more fun. But, you know, Hugo Weaving doing, like, comic book classic Nazi.
Oh, he's very, very just, good.
I mean, obviously, not a Nazi, but a super plus extra Nazi.
I did turn to you at that point and say he needs antennae. So,
he's very much one of your apps. Yeah. Yes. Tell you who he is. He's one of our listeners, Ross. He looks like... Hugo Weaving and Ross look a bit alike most of the time, but in that film, they're spot on.
I don't remember Ross having either an outfit or a face like that.
Well, but he has both.
Okay, right.
Then in Iron Man, you've got Jeff Bridges doing just like turn to total evil really nicely. So you've got a whole you've got a whole bunch of kind of manipulative characters, but then you've also got the really cartoony villains as well.
Yeah.
And in this one, you've got Michael Keaton. The plot is that Michael Keaton has found some alien tech because of all the stuff that's happened in New York. He's actually part of a cleanup crew, but starts using it for villainy. It's really good. Definitely worth a watch. Whether it's essential to the sequence, I think it probably is. I think there's certainly an amount of payoff in Infinity War.
Right.
Particularly from the Spider-Man and Iron Man relationship.
Okay.
Because he kind of takes on a sort of parental role almost for Spider-Man. Next, Doctor Strange, which was 2016.
I was recommended this.
You've seen it?
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it again because I'm not sort of certain that it was anything much.
Yeah.
Because it was just kind of playing on the weirdness quite a lot.
Yeah.
He comes into his own in Infinity Wars.
Right.
Infinity War is probably more of a Doctor Strange movie than Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
He kind of has clearly had a bit of time to build up his understanding of what he's doing. And clearly very, very much more competent in his... abilities.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing that gets introduced in Doctor Strange is an Infinity Stone called the Time Stone, which means he can manipulate time. That, I suspect, is going to have a big role to play in the next one.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a thing. Thor Ragnarok, then, is next.
Yeah.
Which is bonkers and brilliant.
It's your chap from New Zealand, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. A real kind of...
That did look like a good laugh, I gotta say.
Yeah, a good laugh. It was... I think a lot can be said for the Marvel films being very kind of... They tread the line with knowingness quite well. Yeah. You know, they it's self-referential without making it seem stupid. You know, it kind of gives over to that fun without, you know, being ruinous to it.
Yeah.
Which is great. There's also some stuff with... Hulk in that's kind of worthy of some Avengers and kind of what's happening next and things like that. as well as the kind of what has Thor been up to during this time. Then you've got Black Panther, which again, a great film, great fun. Had that, again, really good line of knowingness.
Yeah.
You know, the characters do mock one another, but just enough.
Yeah.
Again, awesome villainy from Andy Serkis. Yeah. He is fantastic in Black Panther.
As someone pointed out, that he and Frodo are the only two white actors in the film of note. Hence, they're the Tolkien white guys.
Nice. Very clever.
That's pretty good.
Very good. Very, the Tolkien. Oh, dear. But you're right. Yeah. But I wouldn't rate The Hobbit very much.
No.
He's not much cop in it.
It is. That's not on the list, is it?
No.
Okay.
No,
that's... Yeah, because they were terrible.
Yeah. Certainly, I would. This is an important film because it does show that there's this wider world.
Yeah.
It shows the level of technology that people on Earth are already capable of.
Yeah, that's a weird one. I never quite get in comic book films.
Yeah.
That they're not quite science fiction. So it's like a guy who's figured out how to build, you know, a machine that goes through time, but he's the only person that's ever done it.
Well, this gets very close to... Basically, this is science fiction.
Now. Yeah.
Because Wakanda has basically taken itself outside the world.
Yeah.
Shielded itself, invisible. Nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
And they've got this advanced technology and they've got this material, vibranium, which is hugely advantageous for power and all kinds of other clever stuff.
So it's kind of a utopia.
Yeah, it's very much a utopia. Yeah. Great film. It does have the Marvel, or not just Marvel, but superhero thing, as we were saying. Two villains at the end. Two guys at the end knocking nonsense out of one another. They're identical. I mean, in this, they are identical to the extent where one of them has the Black Panther suit with gold trim, and one of them has the Black Panther suit with sort of bluey purple.
Oh, really?
Tint.
And it's like a wetsuit, isn't it? It's completely covering, so you can't see the actor.
Absolutely.
Right.
Which means they do go a bit special effects heavy on the fight. So that's a kind of a bit lame. But actually, Michael B. Jordan, who plays the villain, is another great villain.
Right.
Mostly because... So Andy Serkis
is
a cartoon villain. Yeah. He's hilarious. He's brilliant. Michael B. Jordan is... One of the things that Marvel has done throughout is give the villains, or some of the villains, that note of... actually just a person doing the right thing in their eyes.
Yeah.
And actually a lot of the arguments that a lot of the different people give throughout the sequence, you kind of think, actually, fair play.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like such a stupid thing to be saying. Yeah. And he is very approachable as a baddie.
Right.
Obviously, he's a bit too quick to kill people to be the full-on good.
Yes.
But you kind of see, actually... Is Black Panther the baddie?
Yeah.
You know, what's really going on here?
Oh, that sounds good.
So, yeah, it's quite good. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
It is important for having that technology level.
Yeah.
As we were saying. Then you get Infinity Wars, which obviously builds directly into what's happening now. Massive
sprawling one.
Massive one leading straight into Endgame. Probably not going to say much about that one.
Okay.
Based on the fact that that's the one that would spoil the most.
That's a huge spoilers one. Yeah. That's the big spoilers one.
That's the big spoilers one. But I won't talk about it other than to say the Soul Stone is in it.
Yeah.
Then you've got Ant-Man and the Wasp. Now, this is almost disposable, except for what happens at the end. So this is going to be... it's not spoilers for the plot of Ant-Man and the Wasp, because I won't go into that. But it's basically after the credits. So they work out a way to go to the subatomic level.
To be really teeny tiny.
Shrinking down to subatomic, right? And I can't remember what the realm is that they call it. They've got a name for it.
Teeny tiny world.
Teeny tiny world. Quantum realm, that's it. The quantum realm. At the end, our hero, Ant-Man, goes into the quantum realm. And then things happen, because this is basically the same time as Infinity Wars.
Right.
Things happen, so he's gone in and his friends have stayed out to bring him back in.
Yeah.
So he goes in, then all of a sudden the radio goes dead. And clearly something's happened on the outside world.
Oh, I see.
And that's Infinity War.
Right.
What happens in Infinity War
has
happened.
Yeah.
Some kind of problem, without spoiling anything. So he's trapped in the quantum realm. Now, we've already seen from the trailers, he's out from the quantum realm.
Right.
So whether he was saved from what happened in Infinity Wars by the quantum being in the quantum realm,
yeah,
whether that's useful, or his ability to be in the quantum realm is useful, or the energy sources that he's managed to get from the quantum realm could be important.
Right.
Because that's why they were going into the quantum realm, to draw energy.
Yeah.
So that might be all that's necessary from that film to understand the next...
Yeah.
Next big thing. So the last one then is Captain Marvel, which, as we said, came towards the beginning of the list. I won't spoil anything. The only thing that's kind of relevant in here is that she is a super powerful character.
Yeah.
Super duper powerful. And the Tesseract is in this film.
Okay.
The Tesseract is clearly in the 90s on Earth.
Yeah.
And begins and ends the film on Earth. It's not really relevant because what happens in Infinity Wars is... Thanos gets all the Infinity Stones and then does stuff.
Yeah.
So the main thing with Captain Marvel then is that she is a super powerful character.
Yeah.
And that instantly, I thought it was a brilliant film.
I thought it was a good film.
I thought it was great fun. Again, you know, I think that some of these benefit from, you think more highly of them.
Yeah.
The more recently you've seen them and the fewer number of times you've seen them.
I mean, I wonder personally if I forget films, you know, the opposite is true for me. I mean, it's very impressive how they've managed to build up this sort of, you know, pantheon of complete nonsense.
Yeah.
And keep it logically correct.
Yeah.
You know, to it sounds like it does more or less sit within its own logic.
Yeah.
Which when you've got a set of films where really anything you like can happen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, superheroes are probably the ultimate thing where you can just turn around and go science to it.
Yeah. See, the only kind of point where I've ever thought, oh, they got that wrong, the fans told them they've got that wrong and they've retconned it,
yeah,
is that what I was saying about Iron Man with All Hail the King.
Yeah.
Because nobody liked the person who ended up being the real villain.
Yeah.
Nobody thought that he was an appropriate Mandarin.
Yeah.
So the All Hail the King... kind of introduced the possibility that he wasn't.
Yeah.
And that's the only time when I've really felt they've done a lot of fan service.
I'm just trying to think what it is. I don't know if it's comics or certainly a series of films, but there is a secret organisation and the villain, it's not the village, by the way,
right.
And the villain is chosen from a group of people and represents them. And basically it means they can just kill off endless villains and keep having new villains coming back, but representing the same thing.
So trying to whittle it down to essential.
I mean, I do find it very impressive that they don't make mistakes in terms of continuity or in terms of you know, who knew what when. And I think that's exceptionally difficult to do in a sequence of books.
I think we've said it before on this podcast, but one of the things that I thought was most impressive about Infinity War, and possibly the whole sequence of films, is that the majority of them are by different directors. But tonally...
quite similar.
They all feel the same. I mean, they've all got the same palette, so that helps. But Avengers Infinity War, it really shouldn't have worked to put the Guardians of the Galaxy with Iron Man, with Captain America, with Thor, with, you know... You've got all these sort of so different. You know, how they play it, how much comedy they play into it, really different between them.
Yeah.
And it works amazingly.
It is. It's interesting like that, isn't it? I mean, it's, you know, you wouldn't put Bill and Ted into the same film as Robocop.
I would, but
because it would change the feel of both of them. And it's quite impressive they're able to do this, to get someone who is a sort of, you know, square-jawed hero like Captain America and put him with sort of, you know, much more cynical modern takes on it.
Yeah.
That's something I liked very much about both of the first two Captain America films, was they were both sort of commenting on that idea of being a slightly dumb sort of comic book character in a real-world situation. Yes. And the first one, is about him kind of becoming that person. The second one's him kind of doubting it.
Yeah.
I thought that was done very well in both of them.
Let's see if we can come up with a list. I think Captain America is an essential. Iron Man's an essential. Then the Avengers, probably.
Right.
Guardians of the Galaxy 1, Captain America Civil War, maybe one Winter Soldier in there, but it's not necessary for the plot, shall we say. Doctor Strange, I probably get away with not. Black Panther's probably in. Infinity War, obviously.
Yeah.
And then you definitely want Captain Marvel in there as well.
Yeah.
Then you're the kind of extras that would probably be beneficial then. Winter Soldier, Spider-Man, I'd throw in Ragnarok and Ant-Man and the Wasp, and maybe Ultron, Age of Ultron, because it's got the Vision being born in that.
Right.
So that's either 8 or 12 or something.
Yeah,
it's about 12. So it's less than 22 or less than 21.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a Marvel in a nutshell. I'm sorry the nutshell was so big, but it was like, even if we've gone over the hour mark, but I've probably spoken on each film for less than like 2 or 3
minutes. Yeah, I think you probably have. Yeah, no, that's quite a good whistle-stop tour of the entire franchise, yeah. And so what will happen now? I mean, this is obviously the big, big film that they're gearing up to. And presumably they'll just go back to doing more small films afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just like the comic books. You're going to build towards something new.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, they've been talking about phases for a while, haven't they? That these were all phases on the slate ready to go.
Yeah.
That you've got your... Phase one is building up to Avengers, and Avengers is the end of phase one. And then phase two takes you to Ant-Man. And then phase three is from Civil War to Endgame.
Right.
So basically after this is phase four.
Whatever that might be.
Given that there's already a Spider-Man film on the way.
Yeah.
You know, that's coming out later this year, I believe.
There is actually a good film called Phase Four, which is the ants. So, yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, so, it's comic books. So the most likely outcome from this will be almost a reset.
Yeah.
That the events that have unfolded in
Infinity
War will be undone somehow. Yeah. I don't think anybody's going to be surprised by
that. I mean, how long do you have to leave it? I mean, is it not, you know, how long are people willing to leave it before they will tell the same story again? Because, I mean, if you look at sort of origin stories for superheroes, which is the basic sort of default story that tends to be told about them, actual amount of time between telling the origin story of Superman, Spider-Man and Spider-Man is not very long.
Well, that is where I think Marvel have done really well. Because the market of superheroes now is so big, everybody kind of gets superheroes.
Yeah.
So when they redid Spider-Man this time, it's not much of an origin story.
No.
You don't find out much about why these things are going on, or where his dad is, or whatever else. You know, those kind of things that we always get to see his uncle being shot or whatever. Yeah. You know, we have to deal with that every time. But we don't this time.
Right.
It zips along, and it gets into him building his kind of being a superhero much, much faster.
Right, that's interesting.
Yeah, and he gets, you know, to being a fully fledged Spider-Man very early in the film.
Oh, that's a good thing. Yeah.
You know, and that's to its credit, you know, that's because of the awareness. I mean, Spider-Man is supposed to be the most recognisable superhero anyway.
Yes, he is, isn't he?
In terms of merchandise.
Yeah.
His is the first film that's coming out after.
Right.
So we know that he's fine.
Yeah. So who owns the X-Men?
Well, Marvel do now? Again,
right.
So basically, I think that's going to be something that could get rolled in. Wolverine has been on the Avengers roster.
Yes, quite.
So Sony owned Spider-Man. So there's a complicated thing between Sony and Marvel for Spider-Man, which is almost sorted out, but seems to be still a mess. Fox, until recently, owned the X-Men.
Right.
With Disney now being the big boys behind Marvel.
Yeah.
That's no longer the case because Disney went, we've got a load of money and we want those characters back.
Yeah.
So they are back in the hands of Marvel now.
Right.
In terms of comic book, they've always been.
Yeah.
Because the whole, you know, why we've got the people who used to be D-list superheroes is because Marvel sold off all their film rights when they were basically broke.
Yeah, see, I remember a run of not very good films 10, 15 years ago of this sort. And it's interesting, this time around they got it to work.
Yeah,
they've actually made a good job of it. But beforehand they were just quite weak films.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all very interesting stuff. I mean, I'm sort of, you know, superheroes have never been quite my bag. And so it's quite a sort of alien world kind of thing. Sure. So it's interesting to see how well it all fits together and how sort of neatly done it is. And how character driven it is as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something that I think, because they're all larger than life characters, you kind of forget that. But as you were saying about Civil War, yeah, when you notice it being done badly, you notice it.
Yeah.
Which probably means it's being done well all the rest of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and because these people aren't countries or armies or, you know, species or whatever, it is an individual character.
Yeah.
You know, and if we're talking about a superhero who has got a predilection towards anger, he has got to get angry and that will change the entire story, you know.
Yeah.
And that is really quite interesting. It's quite impressive they managed to do that.
I suppose that some of it is because you've invested in 20 films.
Yeah.
And if you're into it, then you do invest into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, for me, some of the stuff that happened in Infinity Wars was genuinely upsetting.
As
movies can be, but
yeah.
Which is kind of surprising from a superhero movie, right?
Well, I mean, I think with any sort of franchise, you either get more into it or less into it. Yeah. You know, with the Alien films, I'm perfectly happy to throw in a towel.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly happy to say there are two films in the computer game which, to my mind, are the canon of Alien.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and one of those is Aliens, you know. And I'm perfectly happy to say that because I like those first films so much.
Yeah.
And because I feel the later ones are let down. But when you've been carrying on for what is essentially, you know, a reasonably pretty high quality product all the way through, it's not surprising that, yeah, that those characters are actually... It doesn't matter that what they're doing is physically impossible because they remain coherent characters.
Yeah.
You know? I think that's really important.
Well, highbrow note to leave it on toes. Good job.
Yeah, can kind of burp to order or something to put us down to our normal
level. Yes, I'm upset at how few belches you did during the episode for Pete to edit out.
Well, I heard there was some classy coming and, you know.
Yeah, there's some professionals involved. Yeah. So.
The drive here was just one long belch.
Was it?
Yeah.
Is that how you got here?
Yeah.
That's how you powered yourself.
Exactly.
Right. Well, on that first highbrow and then deeply lowbrow note, we'll bid you good night.
Good night.
I've been Owen Roberts.
And I'm still Toby Frost.
And we still don't know why you're listening. Good night.